Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. I-V-E-S-T. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today we are doing a full scratch on the Red Hot Chili Peppers Californication.
Woohoo! Very cool. And, you know, if you like this episode and you like reviews, we also did one last year or the year before on Blood, Sugar, Sex, Magic.
Yeah, so go ahead and check that out.
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
First off, I just got to say, it had been a long time since I sat down and just listened to this album all the way through. And I had so much fun, man, listening to this again. Because, like, when this came out in 99... Like it was one of the albums I was like, I heard, you know, I think Scar Tissue was the first single and I was like, wow, this is pretty good. So I was like, boom, went to the store, man, picked up the album and I was just blown away by it. I mean, I listened to this a lot and, you know, came out June 8th, 1999. So like that whole summer and fall, basically, like, dude, there's a lot of singles on this album and it was on the radio all the time.
Yeah, and for some reason, this reminds me of the first year of college, too. I mean, it just kind of carried in.
Weren't that far apart.
Yeah, like, that's true. It just kind of carried into that. And I have very fond memories of this album. I remember going on a road trip with you somewhere.
Like Baltimore.
Yeah, I think so. And driving back and listening to this album a lot.
A little pad.
Road tripping with my, well, my one favorite ally in this case.
But. Exactly. Pretty much. Man. And dude, I know we didn't talk about this beforehand when we were talking about the album, but at least in my mind, this has got to be the greatest comeback album that I can think of for a band.
Yeah, it's pretty good because I think a lot of people thought that at the time
One Hot Minute.
Yeah, One Hot Minute came out, which is too bad because there is a lot of great stuff on One Hot Minute. I mean, dude, P, just alone, let's just throw P out there. That's one of the best tracks. But I actually liked a lot of the stuff off One Hot Minute. But yeah, it did. Although there were some singles and some videos on MTV, it did not get the reception that Blood Sugar Sex Magik had got before it. And then this had. And I think a lot of that had to do with the departure of John Frusciante, I believe, in the middle of the tour for Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then
that's what I think it was,
too. You know, he went into rehab and I believe it was Flea who convinced him to come back for this one. And they let Dave Navarro go, which I think was a very good decision because
just didn't fit, man.
Yeah, I don't dislike what he did, but he does not bring to the table what Frusciante does.
Well, the thing was, too, is like when you think about these guys, and obviously, you know, it's been well documented with everything with Hellel Slovak and whatnot, but you know, these guys got together, especially Anthony and Flea, got together so young that they just grew up together and they have such a brotherly bond. You can really tell that these guys are really close. And even after Hellel passed away and John Frusciante took over, I felt like he almost fit in seamlessly with them and fit their personalities. And I don't know if Dave Navarro ever had that. Doesn't mean he's not a good musician. Doesn't mean he can't play. But I think from an emotional...
Doesn't mean he's not a good dude. You know,
friendship standpoint.
Looks weird as hell, but...
He got Carmen Electra, so.
Wow.
But a lot of people got
Carmen. Yeah. Anyways. A lot of people's girlfriends are back there.
Yeah. You know, but I would say that this, to me, sort of like marks what I call like part two of the Chili Peppers.
Yep.
Because, I mean, dude, they had put out, this is their seventh studio album. They had put out some stuff
before this, man. That is absolutely crazy. Like, I bet if you asked somebody, they would be like, oh, yeah, this is like their fourth or fifth.
Four, maybe. Yeah. Dude, probably if you had asked me, I probably would have said that. But, you know, I remember in high school before this album came out, and they already had a Red Hot Chili Peppers greatest hits.
Yeah.
That I, like, got at the store.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy, man. So, But, you know, I just think, you know, One Hot Minute, I'm really glad they moved on. I'm really glad that John Frusciante kind of turned his life around, was able to get stuff back together. And man, I'll tell you what, like after, you know, all his trials and tribulations, I feel like with this album, they did not skip a step. Like,
no, they, not at all.
You know,
I mean, I know some people think that they did because there was some negative criticism in the fact that like this wasn't just them playing funk. And I think it's funny because although you could sit there and say, yes, Blood Sugar Sex Magic on the whole was maybe funkier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There were still departures in that album.
Still those elements.
You know, there were still departures into other areas. And people seem to forget that. And they just, to me, did that a little more. They didn't lose their roots in how they started in that sound. I mean, dude, the first track comes in and it's pretty evident that, like, you know, they didn't decide to just go adult contemporary. Like the funk was still there for them.
Yeah. And there's some songs in here. Once we start going through track by track, dude, there's some songs in here that have some serious funk.
Oh, like, yeah. Serious funk. Yeah. Man. Some of the best stuff I think they've done.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's just under an hour. But to me, the album goes very quickly.
Dude, yeah. I mean, it's 15 songs.
But it seems to go very quickly.
Yeah. Now, when I was reading up on this, and they were initially, I think, with John Frusciante, they were kind of trying to figure out, okay, we're all going to get back together. We're going to do something. Like, you know, how do we want this to sound? What do we want it to be? And I guess, I think Flea was the one who actually suggested that they record like an album with electronic influences, kind of like U2 did and everything. And
dude,
he said that, you know, they were turned down by all these electronic music producers. They just didn't want to do it. And David Bowie was even one of them.
That's weird to me because I'm like, if you're somebody who's a producer and you have this band that has such roots in rhythm, and that's the thing, like funk is to me more about rhythm than anything else. Mm-hmm. And they got such such roots in that. Like, man, why wouldn't you give that a go? What do you have to lose?
Well, I think there was probably, you know, they did have a reputation as a band and how they worked.
Okay.
And, you know, with, and they even talk a little bit about it. You know, Rick Rubin even said when he was talking about these sessions compared to sessions from the past, where he was like, yeah, like sessions from the past, they'd just sit around and smoke pot all day and be having women over and it wouldn't be overly productive.
Yeah, right?
Professional,
sure.
And everything. But he said with these sessions, man, they were tight and they came in and, you know, leading up to it, they had actually pretty much written, I think they said like 30 to 40 songs in Flea's garage. And then they went into the studio, put down their tracks. But dude, it said they recorded in 5 days.
Yeah. And that's pretty interesting. And when you look at it, I mean, it said, one thing that I read was that most of it was done by all of them simultaneously in the same room. And that they wanted sort of, I don't want to say a dry sound, but sort of a more like not this huge room sort of thing, so that they mic'd all the instruments very closely and all this. And they recorded it on tape. And it's funny because, okay, so they record it on tape and then they transfer to Pro Tools. And then when it comes time to mix it, they ended up mixing it from the tape. That's what they ended up doing the mixes from, was from the tape.
Interesting.
Dude, at 30 inches per second.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Well, it's the rate of speed that the tape is moving, 30 inches per second. Now, right,
like 24 frames a second, like in video and film and stuff. But
yeah,
but I imagine if you go a faster or slower, that's going to adjust the sound a little bit, right?
Like, well, yeah, but dude, I have a reel to reel. Now, granted, it is not the Ampex 24 track 2-inch tape, you know, machine like that's in studios. But dude, this thing goes at either 7 inches per second or 3.5 if you hit the button and slow it down to half speed. Dude, 30 inches per second is fucking screaming. Like, that is moving so fast. Think about it.
Okay.
30 inches is 2.5 feet per second. All right. That's flying through all that right. thing.
That makes sense now. Okay. Wow. That is very.
Yeah. It's just fast. They're very fast. Yeah. We haven't been to Shakey's in so long. But I was just, it was interesting to me that, like, when it all came down, that's what they ended up using to mix the album was the analog tape, even though they did all this other shit, which kind of speaks to how people still tend to record when they can. I mean, I've only recorded using Pro Tools because, dude, recording with tape is like a very prohibitively expensive.
Yeah. Well, dude, I think it's interesting. You know, I was talking about how this is their comeback album.
Yeah.
Right. And what I love, though, is they use so much sort of, you know, inspiration, and so much of the theme was just based on, you know, everything they'd gone through and experienced. Because, man, like, dude, think about as a band, like, I mean, these guys weren't even that old at the time that they recorded this, and all that they had gone through throughout their lives. They'd already reached the mountaintop.
Oh,
right.
Been addicted to drugs, been off of drugs, had one of their best friends die. Yeah. I mean, it's insane, dude. And just, aside from that, if any of the listeners ever get a chance, Flea wrote this book called Acid for Children that talks about his experiences as being like a latchkey kid in the 70s in LA. And dude, it sounds crazy as shit. And that was just his childhood, like before the band. And he talks about like meeting Anthony Kiedis, and like that in the beginning, they weren't necessarily like best friends. They were like the two people who are friends, but like kind of push each other in the wrong direction a little bit, like egg each other on, you know?
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that. I think before we get into the tracks, we did want to kind of talk a little bit about
the reception of
the mastering and the sound of the album, because, you know, it's something that I guess I don't want to say like I never noticed it. Maybe I just didn't care, you know? But once I started reading more about it, like, people are actually upset and don't like the way that this album sounds and the way it's mastered.
A lot of people would consider it a victim of what's considered the loudness wars, which is just trying to make everything louder than the next.
One louder.
And, you know, it's funny because I read that and then I listened back to it. And I think you can hear some of that. I think that the dynamic contrast is somewhat less, right? Sure. Like, it doesn't get super quiet and then loud. It's always, even when there's a single instrument playing or a few instruments playing, it's still at a fairly elevated loud level throughout. I'd actually like to see what the waveforms look like. And I know that's a super nerdy thing, but that kind of does say something.
Right.
And
yeah,
that was kind of a thing at this point in time.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. And I think you can hear it, but to me, I don't find it as a detractor from listening to the album. I think that now that somebody brought it to my attention, I can hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't unhear it now.
But probably. But I don't dislike it. I still think it's a great record. And there's been a lot of records that have been made sort of in that with that sort of style in mind.
Yep.
I mean, OK Go, Blue Color of the Sky is a really good example.
Yeah.
But that's
it's funny because, they even talk about in that interview how they didn't, you know, whatever they, that's like the way they recorded it. Like, it had nothing to do with how they processed it after or any kind of compression or anything they did on it.
Yeah. So it wasn't. I think Friedman was talking about there was no master bus compression on the tracks, but
that's what he said. Yeah.
Compression is different than peak limiting. And basically compression takes the waveform and kind of squishes everything into this sort of area
funnel,
and everything kind of goes into that area and is louder. But all peak limiting does is kind of cuts off the top before it would make it crunch.
Right.
So it gives you a very similar sort of effect, you know, and I don't hate that. I don't think it's right for everything, but I certainly don't hate it. And there's some things it works very well with, and I think it works very well with this album.
Hated it. All right. Yeah.
Now, before the tracks, too, there was, as much as this got widely, highly acclaimed, there were some people who did not dig it. And it was interesting to me because a lot of what I read, people cited the fact that it was a departure from kind of their funk roots.
Yeah.
Which I disagree with. The whole album is not funk. They kept that and they expanded with their that
sort of rock sound. Yeah.
So what, I mean, what do you want? You got to figure the band isn't going to make Blood Sugar Sex Magicker, you know, like,
well, yeah. Well, and that would have been also would have been such a weak move to be like, hey, we're gonna do Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Dave Navarro comes in. We do One Hot Minute. That doesn't do awesome. We're going to bring John Frusciante back in. And then we're going to just go back to this, the exact same thing that we've been doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, this
that
we was,
did before because it worked and that's what they bought. So
and we'll get into this in the tracks. But I think that as much as I guess I could say that going forward, I have not been as much of a huge fan of some of the stuff. This did kind of set that path, like it or not. It just did.
Yeah, it did. It did. I agree. Well, I think we're about ready.
Yeah, I think we got to get into them.
Yeah. And so everyone, this is the point in the show where we go through the album track by track.
Can I count it off?
We kind of talk about them a little bit and, yeah. And we, basically end up scratching one of them.
Yeah.
Could be a fan favorite. Could be one that I love and Grim hates, which will probably be the case in this one. Cause I already think I know what he's going to scratch.
Well, so. you don't know yet. It's, you know, we just don't know.
We just don't know. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yep. So here we go.
I can't have it now.
Yeah. Track number one, Around the World.
Yeah. So don't tell me that they don't go back to the funk roots when the album starts with Around the World.
Yeah. It definitely, man, dude, just the way this song comes in, man, it just like,
oh, I felt it like hits you right it's in like, the face.
Yeah. And it's almost kind of like saying, Hey, remember us?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you might've forgot.
We're back. But one thing I like is that after sort of that, the big intro, this I think holds true to a lot of Frusciante's parts. They're sort of understated, and that's not to say that they're underplayed because they're the right parts, but he just doesn't have to make a big thing out of it. It's more about the rhythm than it is about this harmonic complexity. You know?
Sometimes it's just about playing the right notes, not the most notes.
Yeah. And just that, just works. And dude, Flea's bass is,
oh my gosh,
when that comes in, it's,
like, dude, I've never played a bass. I don't really know anything about bass. I've listened to enough music, though, where I'm like, I have never heard anyone like him. Like, anyone who plays like that in a genre like this.
Yeah.
Man, he just, what he does is just, it is mind-blowing. And I can't say, like, you know, when you do listen to other bands that try to, like, do a lot of fancy bass stuff, I'm kind of like, I don't really like to hear it, but when he does it, man,
Yeah. Yeah. The only person in the 90s that I think could be in the same level, and granted, they were much more of a rock band. Is it Dean or Robert DeLeo?
I forget. I was getting mixed up.
He is a monster too, but it's more in a rock setting. It's not funk like Flea plays, but it's just, I can only say that because you're talking about two bands from the same time period. And he is like one of those bass players who are like, I've never heard a rock bass player like that. Like it, you know,
right.
But Flea is just, dude, he can slap it. He can just do everything. And then he's in the fucking Big Lebowski. I mean, so there's that.
So yeah. I mean, also he's got a hell of a movie career.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's also Needles in Back to the Future Part 2. I don't know which role is better, but we should do an episode on the best roles of Flea.
Oh, yeah. Okay. To be continued. Yeah.
That's coming soon.
Yeah. So, dude, comment below.
Like, subscribe, and comment.
You know, your comments on what is Flea's best role. Because,
yeah.
Other than baseball.
Moving on. moving on. We got 15 tracks to get through on this one. Parallel universe. Let's kind of get it going here. But dude, parallel universe, dude, I love the beginning of this song. I've always liked this song. It's got this kind of like almost like this weird little scratching they do.
Yeah.
Kind of in the beginning. And then, dude, the song just goes, man. And it just has this kind of like propelling motion to it. Like, dude, this like a good song to run to or something. Because of that you rhythm, know what I mean?
Again.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I was going to say, and it might seem weird, but the way this song sounds always reminds me of the music for Mega Man 2. I can't tell you why, dude, but it just
100%.
Does. Mega Man 2.
There is.
Yeah, the NES version, just to be clear.
I think it's that you know, it is that kind of rhythm they have going. Now I do in this song I do hear a little crunch, and where I kind of hear it is where when it gets really big and loud and he starts to sing Christ I'm a Sidewinder, you know, whatever, I'm a California King. That's when it's just like you do hear a little crunch there, but I mean, that kind of.
I always liked the line California King, and I didn't realize it at the time, but California King is actually a size of bed. Did you know that?
Oh.
There's King.
I guess it is.
There's King and there's California King. And California King is interesting because it's a little bit wider and a little bit shorter than a regular King.
Dude, that's kind of. Yeah. Dude, that's a sweet line, man. I like
that. I know, yeah. Because once you know that,
it's just a little odd shape.
It works.
Yeah. Now, we will track number 3, the first single off the album, which really, I mean, dude, when this song came out, it just blew up. Like, it was on the radio, just
on everything.
On the hour, every hour. Dude, it was number 1 in the U.S. Well, I should say Scar Tissue if I didn't name it already. But it was number 1 in the U.S. for 16 weeks.
Wow.
16 weeks, dude. That's insane, man. Like,
it's 4 months.
You know, and dude, long time. But, you know, one thing that I think is really cool and, you know, what I like about sort of this song and the name of it and sort of the message and everything is like how we were talking about earlier, dude, they had been through so much stuff, so many battle wounds and everything. And dude, you do have that scar tissue.
Well, and
right?
In the
you
video, kind of been
beaten up.
In the video.
Yeah, in the video, of course.
They did a good job with that. Now, one thing that I wanted to know is how he plays the guitar with very simply with just a low note and a higher note and kind of, you know, shapes these as he goes through.
Yeah.
And that sort of musical device is actually in use in pop music now. I don't like this person. I think he's a real tool. But if you listen, there's a song out there that I believe is called Love Yourself by none other than the Biebs, Justin Bieber.
Oh, okay.
Listen to how they play guitar on that song and tell me you don't hear that coming from Scar Tissue in the way, because I guess I hadn't really heard a lot of guitar parts like this. And I think that if you listen to that song and a lot of other stuff in modern day pop, that's just like that, you know, just somebody singing about something that I'm sure is super emotional and important. And they kind of use that sort of musical device with the low note and the high note, like very simple, understated. But I hadn't heard anything like that before, and I think it continues to go on. But not that there's ever first, but in my mind, this is the first for that.
Right. Well, another thing that this song has, and I know it's one thing that you and I just love so much about the Chili Peppers, is their use of the harmonies. And vocals. Dude, they're on this album. I don't remember it so much on Blood Sugar Sex Magic, and I haven't listened to One Hot Minute and it's
One
been
hot, minute.
Hot Minute.
Yeah.
So but dude, on this album, their background harmonies and vocals are just so prevalent throughout. And it's just their voices just mesh really well together, but they're always when they do their background harmonies, like they're always so high.
I know. You know, is that like Flea doing that? Like, I want to believe it.
I think it's, well, they all get credit for background.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's, dude, for Shantae, I remember seeing a live video, and I remember for Shantae was doing a lot of, when they were playing live, he was doing a lot of the background harmonies and background vocals.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's sort of a collective issue or a collective effort. So the third or the fourth song, third single, Other Side.
Oh, dude. If not my favorite top three.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Easily. All right. I don't know. There was it's just different. I've always really liked it. And as I listen to it again, one thing that stands out to me, and this is really technical and nerdy, but you listen to the way the snare sounds, and you can tell that the snare was mic'd from the top of it because it has some of that ring. And the only thing I can compare it to is like Rage Against the Machine, Evil Empire, where it has like that ring to the snare, as opposed to miking it underneath where the actual metal touches the drum head underneath. That's more paper-ish kind of, and it has like that real sort of. It's not bad. It's just something that I noticed listening to it now. And like,
that's really cool.
That's where you get to with music where you're like, oh, I really like the snare sound from underneath. You know, it's like super nerdy, but
yeah. Yeah, man, dude, this is one of my more favorite songs on the album.
Third single, and, you said?
Know, third single, I guess is what I had noted as. But I mean, dude, there was a bunch of singles off this album, and they're all really good. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I think
dark they lyrics. Said that
like sort of Anthony Kiedis's motivation was like, you know, confronting, you know, I guess addiction and the battles that addicts have to go through with prior addictions. It's like, you know, it's not like you're an addict and you get over it and you're good. Like every day
is a struggle. You know, sure.
Is a struggle and it is a fight. So, I mean, I like how they just sort of take all those elements and everything they've been through and really just kind of, dude, this is a very honest album. It's like a confession. It's almost like a confession. Mm-hmm. Like it's really good. So, well, dude, you want to get into some funk, man.
Oh, dude, just get on top.
Johnny Five Alive, track number 5, Get on Top, man. Like, whoa. Like, dude, the intro is just so unbelievably nasty.
Yeah.
Like, you can't say that they didn't, they just, like, gave up on funk. I mean, dude, they just crush it in the song.
And to me, a lot of the ones on here, like, when they do it, it's meatier than it had been even in the past. I would agree. But I would venture to say.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we were talking a little bit, you know, offline about Anthony Kiedis and him as a vocalist and a singer. And he's very unique in how he, you know, he can sing kind of straight. He can sing falsetto. He can, sort of rap a bit. Right. But dude, they just do some cool things here. Like I love it when he sings like all in time.
Right on. Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah. The right eye. So good.
Right on. Yeah. like just doing fun things like that. Like that's pretty badass.
Yeah. I do like that because it's funny. You know,
it is. Yeah. Yeah. And they had fun with this album. He even said that he was like, man, we're just having fun making music.
Yeah. Again. And like, that's dude, what it should be about. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, number 6, the title track, Grim. Like they said they had a really hard time recording this. Like he just had kind of the lyrics down and like what he wanted to say and everything, but they were just having a tough time coming up with the music.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't thought that before reading it, but it is interesting, and I wouldn't say it's my favorite song on the album. But for what it says lyrically, I think for a title track, I mean, it really ties the room together, so to speak.
Dude,
it's such
an honest song about California.
I know. And I like that because a lot of people have that view of California that it's just kind of this weird fucked up place. And they really sort of capitalize on that and say it in a really honest way. And I will say one thing that's irritating is if you type in Californication into whatever your favorite search engine might be, it kind of pisses me off that the TV show comes up first.
Oh, yeah. It's a good show.
Not as good as this album. But just say, that, yeah. But yeah. Anyways. Dude, easily.
Well, dude. Yeah. I mean, dude, some of the lyrics that he says, you know, celebrity skin, is this your chin or is that war you're waging?
Yeah. Right?
Like, it's just like, oh, you're fighting the battle. And then my other favorite line, which is actually one of my favorite lines of almost any. It's one of my top lyrics is destruction leads to a very rough road, but it also breeds creation.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's pretty great. Yep. It's pretty great,
man.
Yeah. Track number 7.
Easily.
Now,
I don't exactly, I guess I didn't, you know, totally read into this and try to make some big extrapolation on what it means. But one thing that I like about it is, especially following Californication, I've always really loved the line about everything must go.
Must go.
That there's something there's something about that that like kind of this sort of desperation with this place that you're at, like, you know.
Yeah. And you know, it especially the idea of California and materialism.
Yeah.
And
oh, sure.
Look.
Yeah.
Consumption, and then it's like, hey,
you gotta shed all that. Yeah.
Get rid of everything. I also really like the I guess I would call it a solo, but at the end, there's a couple of little short little solos, but then at the end, he changes it up a little bit, and it's like, it's almost a little happier. It's like,
is that where he says, I don't want to be your little research monkey boy?
I don't want to be your little research monkey boy.
I think that's a funny ass line. The person that I am is only going to destroy.
Going to calling.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, no, dude, it's pretty solid. So, if you were to have this on vinyl, this is actually where you would flip the vinyl. Well, I shouldn't say that.
It's two, dude.
It's two. It is two. But actually, I saw a version somewhere where I think it was one, and this is where the split was.
Dude, cannot happen.
You can't fit
it's
on
56
one.
Minutes. You can't do that.
That's weird. I saw something where it was like side one and side two. I don't know. Maybe I was looking at the cassette.
Oh yeah, yeah. Or the Oh, what were those? The video discs or laser disc?
Laser disc. It is weird, though. I don't know what the hell I was looking at because it did say like porcelain. I was like, oh, that's an interesting, you know, when you flip it on whatever your device is. I was like, that's a weird one to.
Well, that honestly easily could be the flip from record to record.
I would love to flip it on easily because that's a great way to start a side two, I think.
Well, that could actually be the start of side three. I think they easily might end side two and then.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the rest of it's on a,
Porcelain might be the second start of the second disc.
Porcelain. Okay. Yeah.
Well, we got that figured out, I think. Yeah. For all you vinyl owners out there, please just let us know if we're right or wrong.
And yeah. And, you know when you do that.
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
Just note that we're both going to get this. It's just like you can't buy everything all at once. Once we started talking about this album, I was like, how have I not picked this up? I hadn't noticed it. I hadn't seen it. It would be one that I would pick up immediately. And as much as I hate to say it, I think that the version that, of all places, Walmart put out with like the purple and gold discs looks like a nice pressing, but I don't like Walmart as a company.
Well, it was funny though, because if you go on their website, when I looked at it, there was a bunch of it has like 1.5 stars out of like 28 reviews. And I was like, is it a bad pressing? Like, what's going on with it? But I clicked on it and I started reading some of the reviews. So they actually had an image that was up of, it was a double colored disc, but the previous image they had up was a red disc and a blue disc. And so then people ordered it and they actually ended up getting whatever it is, the purple and the yellow. So people were pissed because they were like, hey, you know, I ordered it and expecting to get like the orange and blue disc or, you know, whatever it was. And it ends up coming up two different colors. And so that's why people rated it so low. So I think if you do go there and you do pick it up, you can at least they have changed the image. So the correct colors are showing. But if you see the 1.5 stars, like, don't get scared off like it's a bad pressing or anything like that. I mean, I can't speak to it.
And the other,
that's why it has such a low rating.
The other thing with that is, if that's the worst thing that ever happens to you, that like your double LP of Californication is purple and gold instead of red and blue, like, you're doing okay in life. So don't get too pissed.
Well,
as long as it isn't scratchy.
At least it wasn't classic black.
Yeah. What would you do then?
All right.
You'd listen to it like every other asshole. Poor Slim.
All right. Yeah, we got Porcelain. Dude, definitely slow the album down at this point.
Mm-hmm. One thing I like is he uses the brush. You hear the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of that sound is using the brushes. Now, did you read about the premise of this song?
I did.
It's very interesting. His encounter with this like woman who was strung out on heroin at the YMCA, and she just had this beautiful daughter, and...
Yeah,
and once you read that, I mean, the lyrics make more sense, you know,
100%, and you can understand like it's sort of the contrast, the juxtaposition of, you know, you have this woman who's struggling, and she, you know, it's like you got this kid, and that's where you should be giving your love and your heart and your energy, but there's this other. You know, there's this drug that demon, has just got its got its, you know, claws wrapped in, you know, entrenched in you. And so, man, it's definitely a sad song. And it's something what I also do like about it. I mean, geez, think about how, you know, not only in the other members of the band can just relate to this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So, you know, instrumentally, a very, very basic song, but some really nice touches and very different than even some other slower songs Red Hot Chili Peppers have sort of done. This one definitely stands alone in just its style and everything. I agree. So,
and then you go into kind of I it's tough. I don't know that I'd call this is sort of, to me, for them, a real midpoint between funk and rock for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not totally funky, but it has some elements of
it. It's got the elements.
Yeah, and it's more rock, but Emit Remus, which always makes me think of Uncle Remus by Frank Zappa, but
okay. Which of course, backwards is summertime. And yeah, it's funny cuz he says like summertime, you know, well,
London in the summertime.
Yeah, I mean basically, so dude, the song is inspired, he had a brief relationship with Melanie C of the Spice Girls.
Dude, sporty.
And so
I expected.
So I imagine he spent, you know, a good part of that summer over in London. And it's funny because he talks about, you know, some of the places over there and everything. He talks about Primrose Hill.
Yeah, and these, like, call me now, we'll use a satellite, you know, like I kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's an English girl, American man. You
what can be wetter than?
It's, you know, it is kind of funny. It's just, I don't know. It's just like a sort of a funny, silly song. I'm sure it was a really fun fling they had.
Yeah, for sure. But now you get into the funk, and there's no denying it. I like dirt.
Oh my God, right? I mean, dude, this song, I feel like this is, in a weird way, this kind of is like Pee on One Hot Minute, like just being such a weird song.
Yeah.
Like it's just a weird song. It is. But I mean, obviously Pee is very different in its, you know, style and everything, but
I know what you mean. Weirdness of it. Yeah. It's And the way it comes up too, especially where it's placed in the album is really good. And
And he kind of, I don't know, how would you describe how his voice, like, it's not rap, but
I know
it's got that.
There's a cadence. Lot of it where the cadence is so much more rhythmic driven than tonal, which is what I was saying about a lot of this album, just in a lot of their music. I mean, it's in the way he sings, it's more driven by rhythm than tonality. And it's great because, you know, he uses very simple tonal shifts that work within the key signature, but it's all about the rhythm. He's adding another flavor to that rhythm that's already being laid down pretty good by the other three.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a sense, and we didn't really talk about this as much in the, what is it, Around the World, when he does the scat,
but
right
same,
at the end.
Yeah.
But it, like, that's the thing. Sometimes, I like a lot of his lyrics and some of the things that he does, but sometimes it's not what he says, but how he says
it. Yeah, sure.
And how it fits in, again, rhythmically, right?
Yep.
So, then where we go from,
this velvet glove.
Dude, this is, I don't know, man, this is one of my more favorite songs on the album too. I've just always really liked it, dude. I like the way the guitar sounds on it. Again, it it moves along, and
but it does album down. I think in terms of it's a little more somber. And dude, yeah, I think it is easily the first time you've heard, and probably not the only time, but the first time you hear acoustic guitar.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say is they did mention that there were very few overdubs they did. So this would have to be one of them with that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, because they didn't cite it. This as a specific reference for what the song is about or anything, but Anthony Kiedis did have another love interest besides, Mel C. Is this woman who was a fashion designer. And it was said that, many of the songs that sort of examine love in this album are sort of like in reference and inspired by that relationship. And I just think of the idea of like a velvet glove as, almost like someone you have to treat very delicately. And so it's like, oh, let me, anytime, somebody's like, polishing jewelry or doing something like that.
Yeah,
it's like,
sure.
Oh, you got to put, put your velvet glove on.
Yeah, sure.
Just you got to cradle it and coddle it a little bit. And I'm wondering, Anthony Kiedis, he's an emotional guy, but he doesn't necessarily seem like, he seems like a strong personality.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I could be 100% off. I have no idea, but just that's kind of what I gathered from this.
One line that always stuck out to me that also I think talks about the whole bit of addiction and some of those struggles is it's such a waste to be wasted in the first place. That's such a good line. Waste to be that's wasted a really in good the line.
First place. It is. It is definitely. dude.
Dusting savior. Off your savior.
Dude, this song just comes in like really abrasive.
Oh, it does. It does.
It's just douche. But I'll tell you what, this would be one song. Now, spoiler alert, this is not my scratch. It probably would be my scratch.
If it wasn't for that middle section.
Oh,
where it's like,
dude.
I know.
I mean,
that middle. That middle part is really cool.
Dude, their harmonies are beautiful on this song, and it's because of that transition.
I know.
Like, I just wait. I wait for it every time, and I'm like, this is just amazing.
I think that's a perfect assessment, and it's not my scratch, but I would agree with you. If it weren't for that middle part, it damn well might be.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you, man. All right, dude. Purple Stain.
Maybe the other best or at least top three.
Funkiest?
I mean, come on.
Yeah, okay. Okay, dude, this one is just funky as all hell. And dude, so it's funny because in it, there's this riff.
It's nasty, like lyrically.
Dude, there's this riff in it. But dude, the riff actually, I imagine it's the bass, but it actually sounds like when Anthony Kiedis sings I Like Dirt, when he's like,
burr, 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 burr. Oh yeah.
Like, there's that riff in this song. And I'm just like, it was just kind of weird.
Yeah.
But man, dude, at the end, the end section is just incredible. Like Chad, you hear Chad Smith just really just let it rip and let loose on the drums. Yeah. And then they all three just start rocking out. It's a great like ending section, man. It's really good.
And it is, I would say lyrically, it is easily the dirtiest one. Cause they talk about, of course, there's a million sexual innuendos in the album. I mean, that's kind
of,
like that was a surprise going into it, but this one is very blatant.
It definitely is.
But I like how one of the things that I've always liked is how he just calls out John Frusciante, like in a good way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. John Frusciante.
I like that.
Yeah. It is cool. Now he gets, dude, I know this ain't your scratch.
Oh.
And it ain't mine either.
You'd be a dick if it was. Yeah.
To me, this is like, I think for me, like the most fun song. Oh, and just, it's short.
Because it comes in just, so abrasive.
But in such a different way than like Savior or something like this one's just like, man, I don't know, dude. It's just it's so good the way he just like hammers in with the lyrics, because also usually songs don't start
like that
boom right with the lyrics,
And this starts with everything all at once.
Yeah. And then, dude, but the harmonies, man.
Well, yeah, when they slow it down. And it, well, they, I guess they don't even slow it down. They just kind of tone down the music. And dude, Flea's bass playing during that part is incredible.
Oh, dude, it's so great.
Yeah, it's really, really solid.
Yep. No, he's really good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Captain Obvious. Now we get to the last track, man. Road Tripping.
Now I really like this too, because to me this is also like what some of the thematic elements about, like, just their journey, right? This is this is that. In one,
it's a great summation.
It is. In one thing, although one thing that did catch me is he says he's road tripping with his two favorite allies, so I assume that Chad Smith is not.
No, so here, well, the reason Chad Smith actually won, Chad Smith did not go with them. It was based on a road trip surfing. They were going surfing at Big Sur. So one, Chad Smith had a previous commitment, and two, he wasn't that into surfing. So it kind of makes sense.
So it's him and Frusciante and Flea?
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of, because he's the one who's like, has his shit together more, honestly. Like, yeah. And you saw
they
that.
They even said that, like, in Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Yeah, and you saw that in the documentary. Like, he's awesome, and he's absolutely a part of that thing. But, you know, he's also probably not going to be tempted to, like, blow an eight ball up his nose. Like, he just had his shit more together than the other ones. And I think it kind of makes sense in that way. But, dude, I thought it was a Mellotron, but reading the credits, it's a Chamberlain. Now, a Chamberlain is actually like a pre-Mellotron, where it's still a tape-based sampler that was, I think, in existence slightly before the Mellotron, but it's the same sound, right? They're using like flutes and strings, and to me, that absolutely makes the song. It gives so it this haunting sort of quality, because those instruments... It wasn't the same as getting a string section. It was, it's a little, there's quirks to it. The notes, it doesn't all blend together perfectly. It's off at time, not off, but it's just not perfect. And that's what's awesome about what it's
supposed to be. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this is a perfect, you know, it's one of my favorite songs on the album. I'm glad they put it like
at the end. It would have to be.
I don't think anywhere on the album it wouldn't fit as well. It certainly wouldn't be my scratch. But if I had such a hard time scratching this album that if you had moved it to another spot, I don't know if I said, you know, that I'd be like, it doesn't really fit, you know, or, you know, in that spot. But this is absolutely perfect. It fits
at the end. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is.
So with that said, I feel like you're on the tee. I think I was on the tee last time, and I think this time it's you.
I think I am. So I'm actually going to go ahead and scratch Emmett Remus.
Really?
I had a hard time with this one. You know, there were a few songs. There's a few songs that have parts that are sort of saving graces, kind of like we talked about with Savior.
Okay.
I don't know. I just thought, you know, I don't know if I need a song essentially about Anthony and, you know, whatever, Mel C, Sporty, you know, their love relationship and everything like that. And, you know, I think it's fine. But this was a really, really hard album for me to do.
Well, that's really why we picked these ones. We don't pick the ones that would be easy, because you can just throw that one, you know, right in the trash.
So, and then I would say, now if we're asking like what my favorite song is.
I should have asked that first, but that is my next question.
Dude, that's really tough, man. I don't know. I like Parallel. I don't know. Probably Easily, maybe.
Is your favorite?
Yeah, This Velvet Glove. Interesting. But I like Californication a lot too, man. I like the lyrics on it. Right on time. It's hard to pick like one favorite song, because, you know, they're just all so good.
I know. I was kind of at that same crossroads, because I love all the funky songs that they do. But if I had to pick a favorite, I, for some reason, Other Side is like sort of an interesting summation of a lot of things. And that one, that's to me, true. Was always my favorite one. Even though I love all the other stuff, that one just always stuck with me because it was just different. And, almost a tie between that and Parallel Universe, real close.
Okay. Yeah. Well, do I get to guess what I think your scratch is?
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, dude, scar tissue.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. You hate every big hit single from like every band.
So. That's not fair, but I just, to me, this one was the step in a direction that made me lose interest in the group. That's why.
This song was? Mm-hmm. This is the song that like basically started putting them back on the map again.
It might have. For the people that take their information from the radio, maybe sure. But those of us who actually got the album, it's not that it's a bad.
Did you buy the album before you heard that song?
I don't know.
I know it. I don't think I did. It was probably, dude, back in 99, that was probably back in the day where they were playing singles before you could get the album.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And it was never my favorite, but it was hearing the other ones where I was like, oh man, this is something. Oh, did you also read the thing about how before this album was released, they just like were randomly going and playing like high school dances? And admission to the dance, the students would have to write down like what their thoughts on how they could end like bullying and like beating up on kids. Cause it was kind of a response to like Columbine and shit.
Wow.
Yeah. I read that and I thought that was really cool because like, how sweet would that be if you just show up to a high school dance? You're like, oh, here's your band. And you're like, that's the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Wow. Is this an 80s movie? Like, you know what I mean?
I bet they weren't wearing just socks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was probably a dress code, but very cool. Very cool. All right.
So we're not going to OT.
Not going to OT. Everyone, let us know below what your favorite tracks are and what is one track you would scratch off this album. That's just how the game is played. So please let us know.
Like, subscribe, down below. Comment below.
I think that wraps it up, Graham.
The Dude and Grimm Show.
The Dude and Grimm Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by The Dude and Grimm. Additional music provided by More, that's .. M-O-R-E, and the Timms, T-I-M-N-Z. Copyright 2020, The Dude and Grimm Show.